Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to contact us or send us a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about comfort zones. And you know we announced the topic a little in advance, and I didn't think about this. In fact, none of us did. But the word comfort zone is the phrase, is kind of an Americanism. And this is, of course, a global show. And so a lot of people wrote in and they said, what are you talking about? What are we going to deal with? So let's start out our show by defining what comfort zone is, what it means within our context, within the context of an alternative dispute resolution, a mediation, a seminar, a workshop, something where we are getting together and we need to resolve some issues and go forward to success. So, what is comfort zone? What does it mean? What is your comfort zone? Mm-hmm. Oh, we have lots of people participating. Thank you. Thank you all for being here. Let's see. Arcady says that a comfort zone is a situation where you feel at ease because of certain consequences. You feel at ease because you're certain of the consequences. Mm-hmm. You're pretty sure what's going to happen. In fact, you're really quite sure. Perhaps you've even come in with a preconceived notion, right? And we've talked about that on prior shows. They're all archived, recipeforpeacenow.com. And you feel that you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You feel at ease because you're certain of the consequences. You've got this covered. You've seen it before, and you've heard of it before, whatever, and you think, well, yeah, I can handle that. I feel comfortable. I feel at ease. Mm-hmm. It's within what I know. Mm-hmm. What I think I know, but what I know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michael says that repetition creates the comfort zone because you know what to do. Repetition creates a comfort zone because you know what to do. Mm-hmm. You feel confident. Mm-hmm. And that makes you feel comfortable, right? Yeah. It's really a sense of kind of, this is what I've done before. This is the repetition. I go in here knowing what's going to happen, and I'm at ease with it. I'm comfortable with it. I'm confident that I can handle it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lydia and others are saying that comfort zones are created by habit. Even if you've seen the habit, but not really done it. Yeah. Sometimes you have a comfort zone, even though you personally haven't had the repetition, or that your situation, that you feel at ease because you are certain of the consequences. Sometimes your comfort zone comes from, well, yeah, people call it your background. And I suppose that's true. It comes from the fact that you understand, or at least you think you understand, the other people in the room and how they will respond because you are similar to them. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times we talk about our groups, our group dynamic, as though all the people in it are very dissimilar and kind of there for different reasons, right? And we've talked about the fact that a lot of times people in the group are, they want the same outcome, but because of different reasons, right? And that's what we talk about the most because it is the most challenging group dynamic, right? Or maybe there's some opposition within the group or some dissension. And that makes for an interesting discussion, and it's what we need to resolve and learn about. But sometimes the group is very like-minded. Yeah, the people really are. The participants really all are there for the same reason, and they want the same outcome, and it's relatively specific, and they're pretty sure that they're marching in step. Now, as you get into the process, sometimes there is some discussion about which is the next step, what should we do to achieve it, but there's no question about the fact that they're all in agreement as to the issues at hand. This is lovely. This makes a strong group dynamic just as we start out. I mean, you've got it kind of pre-made. Mm-hmm. And so they're not the kind of group we usually talk about, but they are the kind of group where you could have what Lydia says is a comfort zones are created by habit, even if you've seen the habit but not really done it. Yeah? That's the kind of a group where you have a comfort zone because you are similar. Mm-hmm. You understand each other. You come from the same basic background, the same basic, well, cultural background, religious background, whatever kind of a background it is. So I once saw this was so strange. I was doing an organization where a lot of the people, in fact, pretty much most of the people in the group, had been in sororities and fraternities together at the same college. That's kind of a background. That's kind of a artificially made background, but it's something that they all had in common. They were comfortable with each other. They naturally trusted each other, mm-hmm. because they felt kinship. They felt that they were in tune, right? Yeah. And so it was a strong group dynamic to begin with. Yes, that's a good point. And that kind of a group dynamic, you have to watch out for cliques. We talked about this at a prior show, and that's a very good point, because sometimes some people are overly comfortable in their comfort zone with a subgroup of the whole group, and that's very damaging to the group dynamic. Very good point, because you might have a few people in the group who are very comfortable with each other. They're in their comfort zone because they have a background together, right? They are similar. I've seen this with work groups. Certain levels of employee gravitate to each other because they are comfortable with each other and they have circumstances in common. They have experiences in common. They have opinions in common. But you can't allow the whole group dynamic to segregate into small comfort zone group dynamics. I talk to these people. We kind of sit together. We kind of are together. We kind of, I don't know, make hand signals at each other. No. Yes. That is very damaging to the general group dynamic and terrible for consensus. Mm-hmm. Because it means that people will, for lack of a better term, vote. People will vote with their own group, right? And that they perceive as their own group is not everybody with whom we are getting consensus and going forward to success, but my little clique within the group, because they are my comfort zone. They're the people I understand. Yes, sometimes comfort zones occur because of common language. Mm-hmm. Not just common language as in we all speak Spanish or Russian or something in addition to English, but common language, perhaps an organizational language, like on a job, right? Common language. Yeah. The comfort zones could fragment. Very bad thing. You need to separate that. Usually comfort zone is good, right? We all feel comfortable together and we're going forward. The key term in that is all going forward, all feel comfortable, right, with each other. We're comfortable that we're all on the same page. Not I'm only comfortable with the three people with whom I sit all the time and with whom I communicate, and we have our own opinions, and we've made a subgroup that is not necessarily, I guess, contentious to the whole group, but it's not, everybody has to work together and not in segments. That makes sense? Yes. People are asking how you divide that up when it happens, and sometimes it does. I see this mostly in workplace groups. Mm-hmm. And the comfort zone is created because there is the different comfort zones are created because there is like segregation between the different layers of employee, but they are all required to take, for example, this workshop, this seminar, right? It's a work requirement, but you're not getting them to participate with each other. It is sometimes challenging. You need to, first of all, you need to assign seats, right? You need to divide them up physically. Second of all, you need to have participation exercises, and the workbook does this, exercises that encourage people to deal with each other across the invisible boundaries. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have sometimes, if it is a professional organization, a rather big one, I deal with some big companies. Sometimes I will actually do more than one seminar, more than one workshop at different levels, because the different employment levels, if you've got supervisors and workers, for example, the workers are scared. You know, you could say everybody's equal, right? But we all know that this is the real world, and everybody isn't exactly equal because there'll be repercussions, right? And so the workers are sometimes scared to beat the boss or to say something that's a little bit imaginative or to give an opinion. They kind of sit there stony-faced. They sit there silently because they know that that's the person who's in charge of their employment, right? Yeah. And, that could be better. That could have repercussions. That's kind of a bad idea. So the idea is that we're going to divide up maybe into more than one seminar. If everybody's equal and they're just making clicks like the fraternity thing, yeah, that's different. We make teams across that, mm-hmm, so that we get them talking to everybody else. But if everybody in the real world is not really equal, and your employment depends on it, this is the part where you go to the administration and say, you know, it's too diverse a group. We need to talk about each level and to their issues. Mm-hmm. Then when we finish doing that, we will get together as a whole group, right? Yeah, because we'll have resolved the issues, whatever they are. We'll have taught the information that needs to be taught. Mm-hmm. We'll have understood it. We'll have gone and we'll have done exercises and things, right? But we will, and then we will cross the organization culture line. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's not just the employees, the lower echelon, are scared to talk, say something in front of the higher echelon. The administrators, the bosses, so to speak, if they're in that same group, they don't like to participate either because they don't want to show weakness in case they're not good at it, right? They don't want to back down in some way. Yeah, it makes a funny, it makes a peculiar group dynamic that needs to be divided out and then brought back together when the issues have been talked about and resolved. Yeah, that's the trick to it. You need to work it around so that by the time you all get into the room, you have resolved the underlying, and now you're just resolving what needs to have everyone in the room. Make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because so it's a dance, and I'm going to say the words that you all say, that I say all the time, and it's true. I'm going to say it depends, because it does. It depends on whether the issues are internal or external, right? It depends on the level of group dynamic in the organization before you get there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it depends on a lot of things, but you have to judge that as you stand there and you say, well, that's to be worked out, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the comfort zones are smaller and have to be worked in to the full group dynamic. Mm-hmm. But we will work towards having the group itself be a comfort zone where we can talk to each other and we can figure out what to do that will progress us forward to a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, Sean and others are saying that the comfort zone can be provided by the group membership. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people are talking about the fact that comfort zones, people like to be a member of a group that they feel comfortable in because it prevents you from having to have independent thought. Well, we're not going to do that, of course, but that's kind of the feeling, though. I can vote with the group. I feel comfortable about it, and that really is kind of the goal of reaching consensus, right? Yeah. We have worked with each other. We have dealt with each other. We have talked about the issues. We have thought. We have listened. We have respected the civility rules. Remember our civility rules? Yes, for those of you who are new, welcome. And everyone who's been here before, thank you for coming back and welcome too. The civility rules are the only rules the Recipe for Peace now has, pretty much. And they, at their most core, are very basic. And you look at your group and you decide if you have to write something down that says you can't do something or you must do something. But the rule basically is that no one will be rude to anyone else. That's it. No one will be rude to anyone else. Everyone will take turns, be given a respectful thought about what they think, about their opinion. Everyone will be valued for their participation. Right? Right. Yeah. No one will be rude to anyone else. That's the civility rules. Mm-hmm. And they are important, the civility rules. And that's the thing that enforces the comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Because eventually we'll all be comfortable with each other and be able to work out a consensus and go forward. Mm-hmm. Brianna says that really your comfort zone is, you know how we talk about thinking outside of the box all the time on this show, where we talk about thinking and looking for different solutions and looking all around and listening. And she says that the thinking inside the box is your comfort zone when you say we've always done it this way. Ever hear people do that? We've always done it this way. Mm-hmm. I have a relative who starts pretty much every sentence with, you know that, and then then that says something that pretty much says we've always done it this way. Mm-hmm. Like a rule. Yeah. Because she's trying to enforce a comfort zone of this is how I think the world should be, and I want you to think it true. I want you to fall in line. We've always done it this way. Yeah. Well, yeah, people, that's a way of thinking of your comfort zone. We've always done it this way. So you know you're pretty sure how to do it. Mm-hmm. So if a comfort zone isn't such a really a bad thing, and it leads us to consensus, because we get a comfort zone with each other as a group as a whole, mm-hmm. How do we know when it's time to expand and venture outside our comfort zone? Yeah. I mean, comfort zones are kind of nice. They lead us to be satisfied. Uh-huh. And it makes for a convivial atmosphere, right? Which is one of the things we go for, convivial atmosphere. So how do we know when it's time that we need to expand? Because that's actually the title of this program. How do we know when we're going to venture outside our comfort zone? Mm-hmm. Well, how do we know when this is the moment, when the comfort zone is nice, but we need to leave it a little bit? We need to step out. Mm-hmm. Shanira says, when the old ways aren't working. You know, that's a good summation. When the old ways aren't working. Mm-hmm. We've always done it this way. Well, maybe it used to work, because that's how the comfort zone was created. We always did it this way. But it's not working anymore. When the old ways aren't working, they're not being effective anymore. Oh my, yeah. The comfort zone needs to be expanded, because if we stay in it, we're not going to get anywhere. Mm-hmm. Neil says you need to create a group comfort zone that is beyond any individual participant comfort zone. I might add it's also beyond the leader's comfort zone. The old ways aren't working. We need to, as a group, create a group comfort zone that is beyond any individual participant's comfort zone. Mm-hmm. We've got to all step outside of the box together, right? Yeah, that's the idea. Oh, what we've known, what we've always done, you know, if it was working, we probably wouldn't be here, right? We wouldn't be in this group. We wouldn't be trying for another successful outcome, because it would have happened. The fact that we're working on it means that we need, as a group, to venture out of our individual comfort zones. Mm-hmm. And you know what the leader does, too? We've got comfort zones. We're human beings, right? And we feel comfortable, dealing a certain way. Mm-hmm. Connecting with the outside world a certain way, dealing with people who are similar to us, mm-hmm. because we have backgrounds in common, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are talking about ethnicity. I suppose that's true. But mainly backgrounds in common, oftentimes, especially for the leader, are more like professional backgrounds in common, and maybe organizational and like that. I guess that may be my bias, right? And I'm a human too, but I know a lot of people who I have a comfort zone with who are not like me in ethnicity or culture or religion. But we like each other, and we like dealing with each other, and we are comfortable in the honesty of our dealings. Does that make sense? And primarily because we have dealt before, so there is a history, and also because we belong to interest groups, right? You know, you guys know that I'm a Rotarian, right? Because I've talked about it before. And Rotary is a tremendously diverse, all over the world, different kinds of clubs, organization. But the people who choose to be Rotarians, because, of course, it's completely voluntary. Nobody makes you be a Rotarian. It's not a work requirement, for heaven's sakes. And it's time-consuming. And you have to put in some effort. And there's some expense involved. And like that. And a lot of thought. They're a certain type of person who bothers to volunteer to help other people. The motto of Rotary is service above self. And there is a requirement that you do something good for the world. Right. Now your club, the group that you actually talk to every day is kind of a big thought, but you meet once a week probably, and has administration in and of itself, but it's all volunteer, decides what good thing you're going to do, and you reach consensus on it. But you see, that's a certain type of person who would volunteer to do that and give their time and effort to help people who cannot possibly reciprocate. There's no personal benefit to it, right? Well, all right, there's some networking with each other, and you get to know each other, but basically people, the recipients of the good works by Rotarians, cannot reciprocate in any way. You see, there's a certain type of person that volunteers for that, and it makes you have a comfort zone in common because you understand that both of you adhere to the Rotarian principle. Yeah, there's a four-way test. So, but that's a huge group, but within it, you have to reach consensus of what you're going to do. So how? We've decided we'd like to expand. We've decided that we have to step outside our comfort zones as individuals, make a group effort to be comfortable to step out of the box, right? Because the old ways aren't working. Whatever it was that we've always done, gee willikers, it's not being applied. Mm-hmm. Not working. So, how do we create this group comfort zone? Because I like talking about theory. Yeah, but we're a practical show, right? We're practical people. We've agreed that it would be a good idea to create a group comfort zone where we get to know each other and we get to work together and we decide, have consensus of how to go forward. How do we do it? How do we create this group comfort zone on a practical level? Yeah, it's good to say you'd like one, but how do we do it? Mm-hmm. This is a good point. Nicholas says, and others are saying, that you need to have consensus, that you need to move forward. You have to agree that we need to think of a different way, for example. Yeah, you have to have consensus that we need to move forward out of our comfort zone. We need to venture out. We need to expand. And that is consensus. You have to think about it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Alex and others are saying that you look to other attempts to see what other people are doing to create this group comfort zone. To get really to the point where you say, well, let's expand, let's venture forward, let's step out of the comfortable so that we can move forward, so that we can succeed. Because if the comfortable was going to work, it would have worked already, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can look to other attempts. Well, you can look to your own other attempts, I suppose. Because sometimes you try a whole bunch of different things that seem right, seem good, and it's not working. Yeah, it what seemed obvious when we all got together and said, yeah, let's start making phone calls and let's get this done, it's not as obvious as it seemed. It's just kind of refusing to work. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's kind of, oh, yeah, it's not, this is just not making it. So you looked like your earlier attempts, right? But then, you know, we talk about this on other shows too. RecipeForPeaceNow.com is where they're all archived. And you look outside. You know, the Internet's a wonderful thing because you can see what other people have been doing. And you look to other groups and what they're doing and other attempts, as Alex says, because quite frankly, if they've succeeded, that's more than an attempt. That's an example, right? And also, probably even more interesting sometimes, well, equally interesting, because if you've had success, that's really a good thing, because then you can say, you can use them as an example and say, how do they do that? Let's dissect what they did and let's replicate it with some modifications for our situation, right? Yeah. But failure is interesting to look at, too. First of all, you don't want to repeat it, right? If somebody tried something and it really didn't work, and you look at it and go, ooh, ha, ha, we thought that would work, too. But on second thought, look at that. Didn't think about that outcome as being the outcome that's going to happen. Whoops, yeah, let's not do that because we're going to have the same outcome. So you look at all kinds of other examples and attempts, right? Yeah, to create the group comfort zone, to create really then what it is that we're going to go venture forward and expand out of our comfort zone to do, right? Because we have to have a plan in order to do that. We have to have a, well, we have a process, but we have to know where we're going and reach consensus for it. Mm-hmm. Patrick and others are talking about experts. Mm-hmm. You bring in an expert. We've talked about that in other shows, that it is not necessarily someone with a fancy degree. An expert that's even more useful oftentimes is someone from the other attempts. Yeah? Someone who had success and you'd like to ask for their guidance. Someone who had, well, not success, and possibly they're still interested in helping to push forward, right, to make a difference. And the people who've had success are undoubtedly still interested in that, too, to push forward and make a difference. But, pardon me, but they are experts, either way, on what to do or what not to do. They give you their opinion. Yes, remember, you don't have to actually follow an expert opinion, but it is interesting to hear. And then you can modify it according to your case. Mm-hmm. Diego and others are saying that that in order to expand and venture out of our comfort zone, we can align with other like-minded groups. Yeah, that's out of our comfort zone because it's not us, but we could align ourselves. Pardon me, took a sip of water. We could align ourselves with different groups, with a different organization, different groups, who are trying to get the same result, right? Because more opinions is good. More help is good. You ever hear the expression, there's strength in numbers? There is. Especially if you're trying to influence public opinion, or, worse off than that, influence a politician, right? Get some sort of a law changed, or to have something put, needs a lot of help. That needs lots of folk. That needs, well, input. Mm-hmm. And experience. And dedication. And a lot of time, oftentimes, too. Yeah. And you know, your group might not actually, your people might not actually have the time or the resources to really accomplish what needs to be done. But if you reach across to other like-interested groups, people who think the same the same outcome should be, the same successful outcome, you will have... I love that expression. A lot of people are making the expression... You ever hear the expression, many hands make short work? Right? Many hands make short work. I don't think it's an Americanism. It means that the more people involved, the faster it'll go. Yeah. The more likelihood, the bigger likelihood of success. Yeah, we're getting some dissension. Which is good. It means we're all thinking. Thank you for all of your participation. A lot of people are saying you got to be careful reaching out to other groups because you get kind of unwieldy. And then everybody wants to be the person in charge because, well, they were in charge of their group and now it's big and who's running the circus, right? Yeah. And a lot of times, that's when we get called in, right, to be the overseer for it. Mm-hmm. And it is something. You have to be able to understand each group dynamic is separate, but they need to align and make consensus so we can get something done without causing the groups themselves to kind of scatter because they figure someone else is going to do it. Oh, now that'll be handled. And then they kind of lose their push. They lose their momentum, right? Yeah, that's the tricky part, to create bigger group dynamic from various smaller, enthusiastic groups who may have had a little bit different take on why they wanted the same outcome. The trick is to get them to align with each other, to show them that they really do have common interests, that they are the same in what they want, right? That's kind of the tricky part. But of course, it can be done. There's no question about that. But it needs to be consciously done. Yeah. A lot of times that's why a third party impartial like us, like me, is called in. And that's a real professional act because you have to have experience with people, right? And that's what we talk about all the time on this program. Yeah. So align with like-minded groups. Mm-hmm. Tani and others are saying that in order to align and to make a bigger group, sometimes you should seek mentorship. Seek mentorship. I think maybe the third party impartial who is hired and brought in might be the mentor. The mentor on how to get this resolved, how to get it done. Right? Yeah. The idea is oftentimes very good, but there's different reasons, different groups, and you know there's different power plays. So yes, I suppose there's a mentoring thing. Mm-hmm. Yep, it is. It's a good point. I also tend to think that mentor means volunteer and more of a one-on-one basis. I'm not sure that I think you might bring in a mentor who is respected by everyone. I would call them an expert. Sometimes when you have different groups that need to align together for a common cause, sometimes you need to, in fact, frequently, you need to get the leaders of each group together and mentor them, I guess you'd call it, and explain why they should work together sincerely. Mm-hmm. And what the benefit of the outcome will be. And you also need to explain that they are not being threatened in their leadership capacity. Because they will feel threatened. Human beings they'll feel threatened, right? Because they brought their group along and they led and they fought and they were enthusiastic and they did all the right group dynamic things. And now they're being asked to, kind of share, people are saying give up their leadership role. No, that's the tricky part. You don't want them to have to give up their leadership role, but you want them to lead by consensus with the other leaders who are bringing their groups with them, right? Yeah. And you need to make that clear that they haven't lost anything personally because, you know, there's egos involved, right? Yeah, because people are people. But you have to show that you are mentoring, leading, third-party impartialing so that we can all succeed and pool our resources. Resources is people, money, networking, ability to reach out. See, all these are resources, and the more resources you have, the better it is. Mm-hmm. But you have to explain that nobody's toes are getting squished. Nobody's being pushed out is the key to it, right? Yeah, because people worry. They worry if I go and join with others, will I no longer have my leadership role? Will people not respect me? Will people think my group failed and we had to join with someone else who was better at it? Ooh, that's not good, right? Yeah, no. Well, how else can we create this group comfort zone? By research. A lot of people go for research. Jason and others are saying by team research. Yes. So that we can see what needs to be done. We can look around us on the internet at what other groups are doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, this is what I was trying to get. Kirsten says that you need to acknowledge that going into new areas and that people fear it. You need to acknowledge that you're going into new areas. And there's a fear of failure and a fear of ridicule. Yeah, fear of failure and a fear of ridicule. So, we're a practical show. What issues need to be addressed so that people aren't resistant to creating consensus and to leaving their comfort zone and venturing out? We just talked about you might have to align with someone else, another group. You might have to seek an expert. You might need to move forward and you're not exactly sure how, and you don't want to be ridiculed, and you might fear failure, especially as leader, because you like being the leader, right? People like to lead. I like to lead, right? And you don't want to be perceived, well, yeah, people are talking about ignorance. Yeah, you don't want to be perceived as being, as having failed, because people don't understand that is part of the process. Mm-hmm. I always say that straight up. When we start, people don't believe this, but it's true. I always say, you know, not everything we do will succeed. Not every step that we decide to take will actually be the one that gets us towards our successful outcome. Got to be willing to experiment. Mm-hmm. Because if you take no steps because you're scared and you don't want people to think you're dumb, your fear of ridicule, as people are calling it, if you take no steps, then we for sure will not get our successful outcome. If you try and it doesn't work the first time, let's think about how come it didn't work and let's give it another shot. Let's try again, right? Yeah, that's the idea. We're going to be successful. It's just going to maybe be a little more of the process. Not everything in real life, not everything you try works, right? That would be an unreasonable expectation. And if that's true, it means that you don't try anything outside of your comfort zone. That's not good. Yeah. So what needs to be addressed when we're asking people to step outside of their comfort zone? Mm-hmm. JoJo and others are saying that one of the things you have to address, one of the things you have to talk about is, well, first of all, it's this fear of failure and this fear of being ridiculed. And that's our civility rules too, right? Mm-hmm. And also, Jojo and others are saying that a lot of times, when you step out of your comfort zone, you venture forward, you expand, there's the feeling that you don't want to be the first one, right? It's hard to be first. It's hard to be the one that says, you know, we've done it like this for a really long time, and this is the result that we've gotten. What makes us think we're going to get a different result if we do it again the same darn way? And we don't like the result that we're getting anymore. Gonna have to venture outside our comfort zone and expand. It's hard to be the first. Mm-hmm. And also the first one oftentimes does get ridiculed. Mm-hmm. And you have to reason it out. You have to reason it down. You have to listen. You have to enforce the civility rules. Because the other people are scared to follow the first, the first time they hear it. They have to think on it. See, there's kind of a, you ever hear the expression knee-jerk reaction? I think that actually may be an Americanism. But you know how if you go to a physician and they use that little rubber mallet thing and they test your reflexes and they hit your knee a certain way and your leg goes up, right? And it's kind of, that's called a knee-jerk reaction. It's kind of like that. People go, no, that's not how it's done. Because somebody's the first to say, well, let's do it this way. What do you think? And they have to be reasoned down. They have to think on it. That's their first reaction. But let's talk about it. Let's listen to it. Let's reason this out. Because what we're doing isn't working, or we wouldn't be together trying to reach a different successful outcome, right? Yeah, stands to reason. What we're doing is our comfort zone. Yeah, but it's not getting us where we need to go. Need to venture out. Hard to be the first, but somebody has to be. A lot of times I think the leader is the first. Points out that, you know, this isn't exactly working, right? Yeah. Yeah. Rajesh and others are pointing out that one of the issues that needs to be addressed is potential personal and professional repercussions. You've said something that rocks the boat, because the comfort zone's the boat, right? There you are. You stood up and maybe even got the group to go with you already with consensus. And you're stepping on other people's comfort zones. Because they like it the way it is. Or they've accepted the way it is. Right? Yeah. And there's potential personal and professional repercussions. So how can we address that? One of the ways of doing it, at least in the beginning, when we're fleshing it out and we're working towards, and there's some process to finish up and to go forward with, is to be anonymous, to have anonymity. People don't know who's in the group exactly or whose idea it was or what is said. In today's day and age, with everybody owning a internet-connected device, and texting and blogging and like that, you have to make a real point of it, right? Because people, it's the weirdest thing. People, it's like free-form thought. It's like Kafka. I mean, really, people just blog and stuff without thinking. And it's out there forever. And what you put down in writing without really thinking about it, it's kind of like they keep their person. Remember, okay, I suppose that some of you are not as old as I am, but remember in high school if you had a diary and it was personal? Girls had a little lock on them. I don't know if guys did this or not. Probably they did too. Yeah, a lot of people are saying they had one. It was personal, right? It was your thoughts. It was your ideas. Remember the word personal, right? Now people just spit that out onto the internet for the whole world to see. That ain't personal no more. And what you write can be misinterpreted by the reader, who interprets it according to their own nature and background. And then it gets misquoted because it gets quoted out of context, right? And it makes a mess. So, while we're fleshing it out, while we are expanding our comfort zone, while we are venturing outside the known realm, I have an anonymity rule a lot of times, depending on the issues and the complexity. And I actually, if necessary, and this is an it depends, ask people to put their internet devices, like their phone, which is not a phone anymore, right? It's an everything, to put them aside, right? To put them on the counter, to put them on a table. Confiscate's a big word, I suppose, but I don't want people to sit there and just write in their diary in public. Because first of all, their opinion is liable to change. That's why we're talking, right? Second of all, it's going to be misinterpreted. Third of all, it's going to be seen by the entire world. And fourth of all, we might want to have some anonymity for a while at least, until we get it all settled out. Yeah, it's kind of like watching sausage be made. I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said, never watch sausage or law being made. It's ugly sometimes and messy until we reach the spot of group consensus and comfort zone. Yeah, so don't put stuff out there just like that. I actually don't keep a blog because I got nothing to say on the spur of the moment. I think about whatever I put out into the real world. I actually reread what I write on emails and texts, and sometimes I delete it and do it over because it says it more clearly and it can't be misinterpreted, right? Yeah. And just remember that when you get quoted by someone, they are going to delete the smiley face that you had on the end of that sentence. Yeah, which made it a joke or something. Don't ever joke in writing. It doesn't come off. It's interpreted wrong. So repercussions, professional and personal. Sometimes an expert will give their opinion, for example, to the leader, on the stipulation that you don't tell where you got it from. My word is good. If I tell you that I will not tell who said it, I will not tell who said it. And your word should be good too, because that way people will give you their honest opinion and will give you a steer in the right direction, right? Will give you somebody to contact, will give you their real opinion about what's going on. Because they know that there will be no personal, professional repercussions for having taken a side. And we have just discussed that people don't want to be first, right? Yeah. Yes. Anika's mentioning, this is a very good point that we've talked about, that a lot of, if you're going to have a group, especially if you've aligned and you're a fairly big group, and there's some media interest, traditional media, non-traditional media, some the outside world is taking an interest because they're interested in what you're doing and the issues that you're debating and talking about will affect them in some way. And also, well, let's talk about this first. If you're going to have media attention or you wish to seek out media, sometimes you'd like media attention. You would like people to join your side, join your cause, to help. Yeah, you need to have, well, you need assistance, and you want people to say, yeah, here I am. If this is true, then you should have a spokesperson, right? Assign somebody. Oftentimes the spokesperson is us, the leader, right? Because we kind of are naturally the spokesperson for it. And to decide as a group what our public persona is going to be. Mm-hmm. Perception is very important, right? You need to pick somebody who can really handle themselves in front of the media and knows how to phrase the answer when questions are asked. Mm-hmm. This is especially important if you've got kind of a media, well, fight is a big word, I suppose. People are saying media fight. If there's different sides and they're both using the media to their advantage, let's put it that way. Especially, for example, if something like on a ballot, mm-hmm, being voted on. And yes, we're going to run out of time. We're not going to do our recipes. We'll do it next time because we're having such a wonderful discussion. So sometimes you're not working, in fact, usually, you're not working in a vacuum. The whole world does not have your side. There might be an opposition group, and they might be just as smart as us, right? They might have gotten together with other groups. They might have stepped outside of the comfort zone. They might have reached consensus. And they might have something competing for the hearts and minds of the public, the politicians, the ballot box, the media, whatever it is. Because you've got to remember, we're not the only ones. Our side might not be the only side. There might be people who truly enthusiastically think the other way. They're mistaken, of course. But, hey, they think the other way and they're organized. So you need to have a spokesperson and a public persona. That's a good point. A public persona that you are unified. Charlie says that it's important to have a united front, and that's what the spokesperson does. Even if within the organization, you're still kind of thrashing it out, but you know what your successful outcome looks like. The question is how to get there, how to get the process to do it. Mm-hmm. And so you need to work on that. You need to know that this is what needs to be done. And this is what will be told to the public, and we will put up a united front. And who's going to do it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if there's more than one spokesperson, because there's more than one group involved, and you've gotten together and all the leaders would like to be spokesperson, that's when you got to get your public perception down straight, so that you're all saying basically the same thing that you want. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Hussein and others are saying that you need to negotiate with the other groups to create common ground and to decide what success looks like, and to promote that. Mm-hmm. And to say that you're working on it, that you're getting there, that we're going to be on the ballot and you should vote for us, for example. Yeah. So that's the important part, to create a comfort zone so that we can all work together towards the successful outcome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is, we are now, my friends, we've had a wonderful discussion. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for your enthusiasm. And thank you for stepping outside your comfort zones with me and talking about it. Yeah, even to talk about stepping outside your comfort zone is, well, that steps outside your comfort zone, right? Yes. So we are out of time. Thank you for being here. That went fast. We will do the recipes next time, I hope. I know I always promise two and we hardly get to one. But we have such wonderful discussions and it's so important. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your participation. If you'd like to connect with us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for the prior shows archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.